This is the Midday 180, queued up by Angeli's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Midday 180, queued up by Angeli's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone, alongside Paul Kuharsky in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board, making the show happen for us in Nashville. And we've got a fun hour planned. Javon Kearse is about to join us, where we're going to have our Nashville retrospective in sports. Look back on some of the big moments that shaped the sports landscape across Middle Tennessee. And it was a big moment and a big season for Javon Kearse in 1999 that we'll detail. Jim Washburn will be on the show, Paul, in about 30 minutes or so. That's going to be a lot of fun. And coming up at 1 o'clock today, John McClain will join us.
Yeah, we're looking forward to this. We've got Javon on screen, but we've got no audio. Maybe you unplug your thing altogether, because it doesn't look like maybe there's a mic on there. Maybe that's a thing.
We'll see what happens. But Javon has been doing these broadcasts before. I've seen the podcasts and everything else, the video chats that he's been having. So hopefully we'll be able to connect in just a moment audio-wise. Edley's excited to announce they're planning to open their East Nashville location on June 1st. That's less than 2 weeks, and we give you that notice because we, of course, want you to go there. But they're hiring. They're in the hiring process right now to get back through the tornado damage and the pandemic. But they're getting back in the swing of things. Edley's actively hiring for this location as well as their other locations. If you're interested in joining the Edley's Barbecue family with Will and Catherine, great people, great business to work for and work with, visit edleysbbq.com/jobs, edleysbbq.com/jobs, or visit their Sylvan Park location to apply this week. If you know of someone who may be interested, help us spread the word. edleysbbq.com/jobs. Javon,
I think we might have the freak.
Javon? No, he just left. He's reconnecting for us. Okay. So we'll get that in just a moment. Some of the headlines out there today, the Conference USA and the Sun Belt considering reshaping their conference realignment in order to get their season in. Doug Matthews will join us tomorrow, and we'll detail all of this, as well as the plan for the SEC. The SEC and the athletic directors, they will be meeting later this week to determine what they're going to do on Friday, if they're going to open up in June or June 15th or move it back even further. The idea is they're open on June 1st. Javon Kearse, we'll connect in just a moment, and maybe around 12:10, 12:15 as we get things situated there. He's joining us from a gym, Paul. Go figure.
Yeah. His arms look bigger than in his playing days.
I know. Yeah, he's lean and mean. He and Keith Bullock still get after it. No doubt about that. The NHL trying to get back and playing. The discussion about the borders will come up for travel restrictions and different things. They'd like to get going at some point in June, and then I've seen some people speculate they could play in July. And the United States and Canada announcing today that the border closures will go on for at least another month. Although it's for non-essential travel. So we'll see what that means for all of the teams and whether or not that's clarified coming up. We'll soon find out. That's for sure. NBA, half of the league is practicing, the other half not.
Yeah, that's weird. They're not worried about competitive balance there at all.
Yeah, and that is a bit strange. The Grizzlies,
and some of the teams that are practicing have coaches with them, and some of the teams that are practicing don't have coaches with them.
Right.
It's really divided up in weird ways.
And meanwhile, the NFL, they're not going to do anything like that until every team has that ability, which I think is the fair way to go about things.
But they're not regulating player gathering. So this Tom Brady gathering in Tampa Bay, not being judged as a big deal by the league, apparently. They've not regulated player get-togethers. So if it's allowable where you are, they don't have a problem with it, apparently.
And yeah, I don't either. I know you feel differently on that, but I mean, if you want to get together with your teammates and go do that, what's stopping some of these players from meeting up in Florida or anywhere else?
And I think now that they see, now that they see that, I think many of them maybe thought it wasn't kosher, or maybe some of it's going on and people haven't gotten photographers in the bushes and their reporters aren't doing as good a job as Rick Stroud. but now I think, seeing that happen, they're fine with it. And we'll see more of it.
John McClain will join us at 1 o'clock and we'll get further details on the NFL owners meetings that are taking place today virtually. But one of the discussions that's been a topic discussed across the board and the sports landscape minority coaches and hirings. The NFL is immediately going to institute changes to the Rooney Rule. And they're requiring clubs to interview at least two external minority candidates for head coaching openings, one minority candidate for any coordinator job. So that's what they're immediately instituting, discussing more today. And again, John McClain will join us at 1 o'clock. Javon Kearse has the microphone on. Freak, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing, man?
Good. We appreciate your perseverance with that. And we're sorry it was a hassle.
You know what? It's a small thing to a giant, you know?
So are you in the middle of the workout or have you just finished?
I haven't started it yet. I just did some cardio earlier, but I haven't hit the weights yet.
Among the Titans legends, defensively, it starts with the freak, Javon Kearse, and his record-setting rookie season is today's Nashville Sports Retrospective on the Midday 180. In the fall of 1999, Javon set an NFL rookie record for sacks in a season with 14.5. He added 3.5 more in the postseason that we never even mentioned whenever we're discussing that season. And he led the league with 10 forced fumbles. He recovered 6 of those 10 forced fumbles. He scored on a fumble recovery. He forced a safety. He did it all. And his season is what every top defensive draft pick is compared to in this franchise. Can they be the difference maker that Javon Kearse was? And the freak joins us live from Florida, I believe. And yeah. I'm looking forward to this, going back and reminiscing a bit about this season. How often does it come up in just passing? Do people still stop you and talk about that year?
It happens quite often. It happens quite often because, like, I guess during the draft every year, someone's going to mention he's the next, or he's kind of like a Javon Kearse, which everyone's going to call me up. They're going to record it on their phones. If they have, like, DirecTV or something, they're going to rewind it and save it or something, and then they're going to send it to me to make sure I know it. But, I mean, it's brought up at least, I would say, at least every weekend, sitting around with the fellas just talking about it. And then when they draft someone, they say, oh, they say set and set is going to do this. Oh, set and set is going to break your record. And I'm like, I'm sure they've been searching for that record for like the past 20 years, and it's just sitting there. So it's sat there long enough. It deserves to be beaten by now. But until they do it, then that's when it's going to be beat.
You were a tweener coming out, and that's why you lasted for the Titans, and you were a godsend for the Titans. That rush element is exactly what that team needed to throw it over the top.
Yes.
But the concern was, can he play end in a 4-3? Does he need to be an outside backer in a 3-4? There were a lot fewer 3-4s then. Where were you expecting to go in that draft? Who maybe had 16? Like, what were you expecting?
Okay, now this is what prompted everything. This started from being considered a tweener coming out into the draft. They saw me as too big to play linebacker and too small to play defensive end, so they would label me a tweener. So whenever I was going to meet with teams, I met with maybe like 5 teams, and all those teams were in the top 10. And it's the same thing was, you know, they were conversing with me about linebacker, and they were conversing with me about playing defensive end. I'm like, to me, it don't matter. Y'all just let me know what y'all want. And so, like, once we got closer to the draft, they were still saying a lot of tweener talk. So at that point there, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take it upon myself to make everyone's mind up. Because talking to some of the guys who played for the University of Florida, went to the league, came back. You know, like, they would work out with us, and we would pick their brains like you're supposed to do. And the guys told me that they saw me being a defensive end. And I'm like, no, because you got to see, I went to college as a free safety wide receiver. I'm thinking finesse. I'm thinking agility. I'm just thinking just straight up just one of those positions to just not be like down on the line. So once I got through that, once hearing from the guys, I'm like, you know what? Let me get my weight up to make everyone's mind up that I can play defensive end. And once I got on, I think I got on some type of protein. I think it was Phosogen or something, but I put on a bunch of water weight. And that's why my weight is at that 264. I only had that weight for one weigh-in, which was at the NFL draft in Indianapolis. Yeah, at the combine. That's my only time wearing that weight. And then still up there, people were still calling me a tweener. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get back down to Javon Kearse weight and Javon Kearse style or whatever and do what Javon Kearse does. So I just went back down to 250, 255. And that's when I blew out all the workouts and everything else. And then now I'm going to go in as a defensive end. I mean, say it again.
Sorry, finish your thought, Javon. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and so basically, in all the teams that I met with during the draft process, they were all like top 10 teams. And so I was expecting to go top 10. So my thought process was top 10, which I'm glad I did have that thought process because I didn't go top 10. I went number 16 when I got a phone call from Jeff Fisher. And then after that point there, the Titans were getting a very pissed off, a very dedicated, a very driven person wanting to come in and prove everyone wrong who didn't think that he deserved to be in that top 10.
Coming up with Javon Kearse, we're going to go through some of the big storylines of that season. We'll get into the Fred Miller game in the regular season against the Rams, chasing down the Baltimore Quadri Ismail.
The missile.
Crazy play, a memorable one at that. And the final game of the regular season against Shar Pourdanesh, who talked a lot of trash and disrespected Javon Kearse. We'll tell you that backstory when we come back, plus the playoffs that led to the Super Bowl against the St. Louis Rams. Javon Kearse with us on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. We're looking back on the 99 season for Javon Kearse, the rookie season with 14.5 sacks, drafted 16th overall to the Tennessee Titans the year they went to Atlanta to play for the Super Bowl and the Lombardi Trophy. Javon Kearse joins us on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
So they knew they were on to something. Training camp, Washburn runs a drill. I think you have four defensive linemen down. Maybe he was pulling a football. You had to turn and run, and there were only three cones. This was maybe 10 yards back. So,
no, it had to be about a good 15, 20 yard sprint, like towards the sideline.
Okay,
no,
so go ahead, pick up the story from me.
Okay, I'll pick up the story. Washburn, my guy, it was his first year coaching in the NFL, along with my first year playing in the NFL, going through all these different drills, you know, because he coached in college before that. But once we got into this drill, it's a drill about pursuit, which we live and die by pursuit. It'll never fail you. And so we have three, like if it's four D linemen, we have three cones set up on either sideline. Well, both sidelines are set up. But the idea of the game is you gotta come up on the ball, just chop your feet, and you can't guess because like if you guess it's gonna be on the right and he point left, you'll be the last one there. So you can't guess at all. And so basically each time we do it, say if we got four linemen, it's three cones set up. If it's three linemen, it's two cones set up. And then we kept doing it like that. But this one particular time towards the end, we had three cones set up and had four linemen. And I guess the other time they went to the opposite way of me because I have the speed. They wanted me to run farther. So they would always go to the opposite side I was on. So this time he thought I was going to guess and go the opposite way. But he pointed my way and then I ran towards the cones.
Everybody runs, right? Everybody ran for the same cone.
Everybody runs, and then I took a next step. I'm like, you know what? I got this. Let me show them something real quick. And then I'm running towards the cone. I reached down, did not break stride. I reached down, grabbed the first cone, and kept running, put it over the second cone, kept running, put it over the third cone. And now I'm running with all three cones. And boom, that was it. And it was just at that point there, they were like, okay, well, maybe. Well, this is cone. This is not second quarterbacks. So, okay, that was the cone drill.
I watched this live. This is supposed to be like a musical chairs thing where one guy winds up without a cone and is shamed. Javon comes away with everybody else not getting a cone. He gets all three cones. This is one of those things where Washburn's like looking at everybody with like, did you just see this? It was one of those things like when he hit the ceiling.
Yeah, and to add to that, for some reason, the person who was doing the video that day kind of missed part of it. Oh. Washburn was pissed. I'm like, it's just a drill, coach. We're going to do another drill. He's like, no, I wanted that one because it was just so out of the ordinary, just so unexpected.
Jim Washburn will join us a little bit later this hour. You were so many memorable moments throughout this season, but you were able to immediately jump into a year and have a big impact early. You were NFL Defensive Rookie of the Month to open the season. And I'm curious, when did you know, oh, I'm about to dominate some offensive lines this season? You were already focused. You alluded to that. But it's one thing to be focused. It's another thing to come in as a rookie and actually be dominant at that position.
Right. You know what? I don't think it hit me until, I would say, to be honest, I got much respect for this guy. I would say it had to be this one game against this one team that we played twice that year. We played in the last game that season as well. Okay. It was against the Rams. Like, you know, to be honest with you, just like, first game of the season, I got 0 sacks. Second game, I got 3 sacks. I want to say the next 2 games, I probably didn't get any sacks. So I'm like, okay, I got sacks, but like I really wasn't. I ain't have it like in my head. Like, I'm going to go dominate every game. And I want to say like probably there's a game or two. There's like a game or two where I probably didn't get anything or maybe got one. And then once I got into that Rams game, it was a Rams game. Like, that was the game there because if I wasn't getting sacks, I was causing offsides. I was causing holding penalties. I was getting all that stuff. And then at that point there, that's when I came to the conclusion that, you know what, I'm going to be the only person that can stop me. So I went into each game, like me and Washburn went into each game with a game plan. Like, you got to go in and plan. We got to go in and plan for these teams and plan for these offensive linemen because you know that we're going to get double teams and backs chipping and everything. So I went into each game like, I know I got this. It's their job to try to stop me.
Javon Kearse with us, and he's mentioning the matchup against Fred Miller, and he would jump offsides the second or third time, and then 3 false starts turned into 6 false starts. He had a holding penalty against you. You finished that game with a sack, a forced fumble, and 5 tackles, and you apparently knew, based on the way he was lining up, whether it was a run or a pass. So you had him beat before the ball was snapped, and he knew it.
Correct. And that just comes from my get-off. And then me and Coach Washburn worked on that every day, all day. Like, we worked on it with all the defensive linemen, but I knew for me, my bread and butter was my get-off because it's God-given. I wish I could say I worked with somebody and they got it there, but it's God-given. So I just got to do my job of feeding it to that person across the line for me every chance I get. And then if I keep feeding it, you're going to get full sooner or later.
Javon Kearse with us. Final month of the regular season against Baltimore. First play of the second half, you bull rush to get to quarterback Tony Banks. You jump to deflect the pass. I'm setting it up because it's so phenomenal. You're in the air as the ball is thrown. It's a quick out to Quadre Ismael. And
Nick, yeah,
he was past several defenders as you chased him 60 yards down the field, dragging him down from behind and on top of Samari.
Okay. First of all, I must say, I think because that play right there, I think I got drug tested at least every week because of that. But not drugs, but they're looking for pads.
Oh, yeah.
Performance enhancement drugs. Like, no, how the hell? No. You know what? You're not supposed to be able to do that. So we need to check you like every week. And I'm like, here you go. Here you go every week. But that was a play that I would say that's one of my favorite plays ever. besides the play against, you know, against the Steelers that last game of the season. But like definitely that play right there, just going, just doing what I do. I would say that kind of changed the, that kind of evolved like defensive lineman, because like now you see this guy chasing receivers downfield. Like there's no reason why you can't turn and run and chase plays down. But that play there, like I still hear from Samari, he still says he wasn't running. But I'm like, okay, well, that's you, but I was, so I'm sorry. And so, but then again, it's not like I was slow or something. And it's not like I was running like a 5-5 and then I ran past him like to get Quadri. I'm like, no, I was running, dude, so it's all good. But that play there was just one of those hustle plays, like to just let you know, to remind any offense, any defense, the play is never over. So like no matter where you are on the field. And then I would say that play right there probably just saved myself. People like, wow, I see why they call him the freak.
Absolutely. Paul, let's get to the final game of the regular season against Pittsburgh, because this was the first time, I think, and you can correct me, that you had been disrespected by your opponent. Shar Pornadesh was talking in the locker room and said, who is this guy? Like he's some rookie. I'm going to give him a couple of shots below the belt and we'll see how he responds. And is it true when you arrived to the stadium for that road trip that you put a picture of him in your locker?
I did, but it was that dang coach all the stuff, walking to the locker room, there happens to be a picture of him. Like, come on, dude. You know what time we get here every game, man. So, but it was there, so I put it up in my locker. But apparently during the week, their offensive lineman was hearing a lot about what I do and what I was going to do and everything else. And he was like, man, he's human. Like, he's human. He's just another football player. Like, I got this. And then he said some more stuff to where my position coach, Jim Washburn, he's going to make sure that everyone sees it. He's going to do whatever he can. He don't care if there's already a fire lit up under you. He's going to like throw some gasoline on it, because we're going to get you going that much more. And so once I get all this talk about what I'm not going to do, and I'm just an average guy and I'm just all this hype, got into the game and did what we had to do. And that play, when I got that sack called fumble recovery and touchdown, it had like so much special meaning to it, because that was also the sack that broke the franchise sack record. Not the Rick sack, but just for the team sack record, that sack broke that record. And I happened to get the ball, so imagine that. But it's a lot more goes to that, because when I ran into the end zone, I spiked the ball and headed to the sideline. And for some reason, I see this one crazy looking guy on the sideline with eyeballs like this big, and it happened to be Jim Washburn, was like, where's the dang ball? So I had to go back on the field, go to the referee and get the ball from the ref so I can go and deliver that ball to my defensive line coach, who deserved that ball more than anyone else, because he got in and motivated us and got us going.
That dance you did, was that the dance, or was the dance when you got the rookie record where you scratched the record and broke the record? A lot of people took a second to get it.
Yeah.
How long did you have that in mind, or how spur of the moment was
it? It was spur of the moment, I swear to God. Swear to God, from my right hand. It was just one of those things. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things. I'm like, you know what? There's a chance I may break the record, but I'm not just putting it in. I'm not just putting it in my locker and circling or whatever. My main focus was turning this 8-18 into something better, something a lot better. And everything else just pretty much came along. But like once I got the sack, but actually I thought I got the sack against the Falcons. No, you know what? Yes, I thought I got it against the Falcons, and that wasn't true, because then they tried to say it was a aborted play, it was a run play, so it didn't happen. But so then I think when I got it against the, it was official when I got it against the Jags, I think, and that one was just like I got to give the people something. And so that was the only thing I could think of. And it worked. But once people figured out what it was, and they ended up like featuring me in ESPN magazine doing it or whatnot. So it was the only thing I could think of. But it was for the moment, though.
Javon Curse with us. Can you stay one more segment with us, Javon? He's with us. We're going to tell some more stories when we come back. We'll get to the Music City Miracle game where Javon can recite the stat line. And we'll get to some other stories, too. Practicing against John Runyon, for instance, where the first true battles of the NFL happened for Curse's career. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5. The freak, Javon Curse, with us. And, of course, he joins us from the gym. You can hear the weights clanking in the background as we reminisce of his rookie season from 1999. What was your stat line from the Music City Miracle game?
Let me see. Two sacks, two cost fumbles, 2 points, and a few more tackles in there, I think. How does that sound? I was twoing it up, baby. I was deucing it up that game. That's all I know.
It was unbelievable performance. Oh,
but I just had one safety, though. But the one safety did give us 2 points. So, yes.
Yeah, and you needed some points in that game because nobody was doing any damn scoring.
No, not at all. That's definitely a game to remember there. I hear about that game at least once every – I say about at least once every 2 weeks. And it's always along the lines of – was it a lateral or not? I'm like, yes, it was a lateral. It wasn't a forward lateral. I'm like, it wasn't. It may not have even been a backwards lateral, but it was lateral though. So yeah.
Everyone listening to this, that's a Titans fan, is not going to disagree one bit with that. practicing against John Runyon when you first entered the league, what was that like, and how much did he develop you? Because I remember that following year where you matched up against Runyon in Philly. That was a big storyline, and that was one physical matchup. How physical were the practices?
From day one, they started out physical from day one. And I'm talking about from mini camps where we didn't even have pads on yet. And I remember one practice I was lining up. Mind you, I played linebacker in college. I didn't play defensive end in college. So this was my first time playing DN. And then I'm lined up during the first mini camp. And I was on, of course, the show team going against the ones on offense. And I was on John Runyon and Benji Olsen side. And I remember like I came off or whatever and did like a move on John and came inside and Benji tried to take my head off. Like, he tried to take my head off like I was a stranger. Like, I did something bad to his kid or his mom or something. And at that point there, you know, like he pushed me. I tried to keep my balance, and I ended up, like falling down. I'm like, okay. So this is how we do this thing. And so at that point there, I started bringing it. But going against John, like, every day, really going against him during training camp, like, that was – I would say that was – it's that – pretty much got me developed as much as Washburn got me developed. Like I said, I didn't play defensive end in college. I played it when I got to the big league. And then going against John Runyon, because John Runyon, for some reason, that's an angry cat, man. I don't know why he's so angry, but he was just so angry. He was always just walking around with that bottom lip out. And especially, I don't think he had any love for me. Like, I was thinking maybe because I'm a rookie or maybe because I got a nickname. I don't know what it was, but this guy made me bring my lunchbox, the steel-toed boots and a hard hat to practice every day, in which that pretty much got me ready to go. And then I didn't think about it when it was happening because it was happening so fast going into my rookie season and then going fast, just making big plays, and then the media, everything else, and everybody just pulling back and forth. I didn't think about it until back when I was playing with the Eagles and we were out at dinner during preseason, and then I saw John there with this kid, his wife, and then just see how big they get. And then I just thought about it. I walked over to him like, John, man, I'm like, I want to thank you right now. Like, I should have thanked you back in 99, 2000, but I want to thank you now, which at that point it may have been like maybe 05, 06. I'm like, I'd like to thank you for getting me ready for this NFL, because listen, you didn't take no time off. You didn't take no days off. So that made me like come to work every day, like knowing if I don't bring it today, that big old stem of 69 going to make me look like a little girl or something. So I can have that.
How did he react to that, Javon? What did he say back?
He just looked at me like, I think I probably caught him off guard too. He just turned his head to the side like, it was nothing, man. It was nothing. And just took a sip out of his beer, and that was it.
Javon, Paul and I know the story for what motivated, what was really motivating for you throughout your career, specifically that rookie season. But for those who were not here or don't recall, explain your motivation family-wise and how you would psych yourself up against the opponent lining up across from you each week, whether the story was actually true or not.
Well, the story was partially true. I lost my brother. Well, my younger brother, 2 years younger than myself, he got murdered when I was like in my second year in college. And so that always stuck with me. And for some, not for some reason, like I used it to my advantage. So like through college, and then when I got to the NFL, tired, getting fatigued or whatever, I would just push myself, tell myself like, this guy that's lined up over from me, you know what? That's the guy that killed your brother. I knew it wasn't the guy that killed my brother, but I told myself that to tell myself anything because I'm going to figure out ways to motivate Javon the way I need to be motivated. And I would use that to my advantage, like to say, you know what, you're tired right now, you're tired, you're fatigued, like you're ready to take a knee, you're ready to go to the sideline to get some water, but guess what? That's the guy that did it. Guess what? He knows something about it. So go and take it out on him. And the rest was history. Just that I would push myself with that like every time I was out there because I just had to find some type of way to motivate myself. And speaking of trying to push myself and motivate myself, that's what I did when I went into the league, or whatever, because like I said earlier, I thought I was going top 10 and I went the 16th pick. I'm like, you know what? I'm pissed now. You know what? The first 15 teams that skipped me, I'm gonna show you that you messed up. And matter of fact, the 15 teams after, because I think it was maybe 31, maybe 32, I don't know. Whatever happened about teams, I'm like, I'm gonna make the teams that didn't trade up and pick me, I'm gonna make them wish they would have did the same thing as well. So I want to go in and show the Titans that, oh, y'all made a good pick. I don't know if y'all know it or not, but I just got to go out there and show y'all. But it's just like I motivated myself. So I'm going to find whatever I can to motivate myself. So during my season, during football period or whatever, I would always remind myself, you know, like whenever I'm playing against someone, I'm getting tired, I'm getting fatigued. Like, listen here, like you got to push, bro. Like you got to find something from somewhere, even if you got to like fabricate something. And that's pretty much what I did. And it worked.
Final thing for you, because I've had a note to ask you about this in a previous visit. Were you in London with the Titans?
Yes, I went out two seasons ago. Yeah,
we were there, and you came on the show from Barrel Boy and Banker, and I could not remember what it was to ask you, and now I remember. So not related to 99 at all. What was it like partying with Matt Damon in Prague?
That's funny. That was fun there. And it wasn't only Matt Damon. It was Matt Damon. It was Jeremy Piven. It was the guy. I should know his name. Heath Ledger. Okay. All those guys. Now, I guess they were out there shooting like maybe like two different movies at the same time. They were all hanging out. And literally, it was just myself and my little financial advisor. Just went out there to just hang, to see some things, do some shopping, and then we're at a little bar or whatever, just hanging out. And some guy comes over, and it happened to be Jeremy Piven. And he just came up. He was like, dude. He was like, man. He's like, my friend want to meet you. I'm like, who's that? He's like, man, just come over here. And then he took me over, and it was Matt. It was Matt Damon or whatever. Just went over, met him, talked. We had a few drinks, a few shots, and I would say we ended up shutting that bar down. They had like a nice apartment that had video games and pool tables and stuff. We went back there and hung out for like 2 or 3 hours. And then before you knew it was like 8 in the morning.
One to remember as best as you can with all the shots.
I know. But it was a fun, chill time. It was like a whole bunch of those guys. Like it wasn't really like stragglers along. It was just like pretty much people who were like in, like it was like all the actors and actresses who was with them, and then just me and my financial advisor. And we went and hung out, and we exchanged numbers, but never really called each other. And I just waited until I see him again.
Hey, off air, you'll pass us that. We'll have him on next week for the set.
Let's do it. Javon, hey man. Thanks for doing this. We love going down memory lane, and everyone remembers that rookie season in 99. This has been a blast.
Thanks for having me. And hey, rookies, 14 and a half, go get it.
Hey, we're going to tag Shar on the podcast so he listens to this. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good night, fellas.
The Freak has been our guest. Jim Washburn next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Great chat with Javon Kearse, and we look forward to that as much as we look forward to our next visitor as we have the Nashville Sports Retrospective, Javon's rookie season of 1999, here on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Paul Koharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. And Paul, the man who joined him in Nashville in 99 for year one, was also year one for Jim Washburn on the defensive line as the coach.
Wash, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Good. How y'all doing?
We appreciate you pushing back a little. We got Javon on a roll, shockingly. I think on the second day, gyms were open in Florida. He talked to us from a gym.
He's doing curls. How's he doing?
He's doing great. He's doing great, and he had a lot of fun reminiscing about that year. I started him off with the drill. He said you were pissed that it wasn't on tape. I was watching it live. My memory's gone, but I can't forget this one where you had on this particular snap, four guys on the line, and it was about pursuit, and they were turning and running to go, I don't know how far, maybe 15, 20 yards to snatch up cones. And it was really about, I think, four linemen trying to get three cones, and the one loser wouldn't get a cone, and he would be shamed. But on this particular snap, three guys were shamed. Tell us, we heard his recollection of that snap. Remind us how it looked from your vantage point.
Well, we were over there on the field. We were stuck on behind Penny's department store over there at the old place. Anyway, we had a good time, and we're going to run the ball better than anybody's ever run the ball. That was our goal. Had a drill where four guys hit the sled, and then they backed up, and I gave them direction either right or left. They had to turn and run, and there was four guys after three cones. So, you know, somebody's going to be out, and everybody's hooping and hollering. And all of a sudden, Greg Williams comes over and gets in the middle of it, and he's trying to take it, credit for it later. But anyway, Javon beat everybody and got all three cones. He stacked them all up in a row, and the film had stopped right prior to that. It was unbelievable. So, went crazy. Even the whole team stopped what they were doing on the other fields and watched. Yeah, that was really cool. That was early in training camp, so that was something.
How much grief did you give the three guys that couldn't get a single cone against a rookie?
Yeah, I gave them a lot of grief. That's bad. But anyway, it was good. We had a good time, and once they figured out, you know, we were going to do things a little different, you know, they didn't like me at first, and had a little walkout type deal during training camp, you know, a little protest. But once they figure out we're going to go and play and turn it loose and, you know, take deep belts off, they all loved it. And Javon and John Thornton were fun because they didn't know any different. So
he gave a lot of credit to John Runyon. He told a nice story about how he realized that year. How much were Kearse versus Runyon matchups a part of what helped make Javon what he was that rookie year?
Oh, I think they were good. You know, Runyon was sort of a get after Javon, but I think he, and along with everybody else, saw how he was going to help the team. He was going to help us win. They'd been 8-8 forever. And, you know, I think that, you know, I think everybody respected each other that year. I mean, you know, sometimes there's a lot of going back and forth at practice between offensive line, defensive line. But I think that that was a good thing together. It was a team deal. It really was. And you hear about that. It must have happened to the Titans this year late. I mean, it must the same thing, same chemistry must have happened. But, yeah, Runyon helped him. Runyon was a good player. Anyway, that was good. I was thinking of a play today. I thought, let me give a shout-out to Cash and Noel, my grandsons. I don't want to leave here without saying hello, but they're the Washburn team. But, anyway, we're playing the Raiders, and I told Jabon the first play of every game that year had been a three-step drop where the back had come to block the defensive end, and Gannon was going to throw it on three steps. Was that in? That was in '99, wasn't it? At our stadium, first play of the game. Anyway, sure enough, that here came the back to cut Jabon, and Jabon jumped over him. A three-step drop. They threw it about 1.2 seconds or something, and he sacked Gannon on a three-step drop. And I saw Gannon at the Pro Bowl later that year, and he said that was the most remarkable thing he had ever seen. I never got sacked on a three-step drop, except Jabon Kirst.
Jim, we're up against a break. Are you willing to hold with us for a few minutes and talk to us on the other side?
Yeah. Call. I'm gonna be driving, but call. I'm in a new truck, and I hope I can figure out the phone system.
All right. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Jim Washburn, our guest, and more stories straight ahead and the development of Jabon Kirst, who moved to defensive end. We'll get Wash's take on all of that next. Midday on 80, Q'd by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.